Air Josh Yowie. Let's go over the live and local weather forecast. Today we have 70 degrees and rainy. It is scattered showers with an occasional on and off showers from now until the rest of the day. Tomorrow, Thursday, it will be 79 degrees with a 100% of chance of beautiful sunshine. And finally, Friday, we have another beautiful day, 78% with a 100% chance of sunshine. The weekend's also looking great with weather in the mid to high 70s, and after that, next week also looks to be sunny. So some good weather ahead, just got to get through today's rain. We will be right back with Destination Hockey.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Christmas is pretty cool. So is Thanksgiving. Halloween's pretty fun for kids as well. But the hockey offseason? Sign me up for that. Silly season is upon us and things are getting crazy. Trades and extensions are galore, blessing our lives on the daily. Since last Wednesday, there has been a big move in the hockey world every single day. And I'm going to be here to walk you through it. My name is David Lazar and you are listening to Destination Hockey. Today we will dive into the insane Erik Karlsson and Kevin Hayes extensions, the NHL awards, which will take place later tonight, while also hearing from Pittsburgh Penguins beat writer Josh Yowie. But first, let's review what was a crazy week in the hockey world. We'll be going through every roster move from last week, and I will be discussing their ramifications. So for our first transaction, let's go over the Philadelphia Flyers trading Radko Gudas to the Washington Capitals for Matt Niskanen. Radko Gudas. Interesting character. He's a physical player, lots of suspensions, right up there with Tom Wilson in terms of just a feared person. No one likes to play against him. People do. 77 games last season, 4 goals, 16 assists. He's a physical, gritty player. Only one power play point in his time in Philadelphia. Doesn't do the power play. He's more of that second, third pair lockdown guy. Washington really likes the Blues Stanley Cup style of physicality, grit, determination, and Gudas matches that perfectly. He's a really good defenseman. He's someone that I personally really like, even though he's been a thorn in a lot of teams' backs, especially with the suspensions. He's reckless, but he's not as reckless as he was before he got handed down by the NHL. His role's reversing. I think he can be a really solid second-pairing defenseman, and this is what's important for Washington. Niskanen has 2 years left on a deal that will pay him $5.75 million a year. Gudas is making $3.35 million for the next season. And on top of it, Philadelphia is retaining 30% of the deal. So now it's only $1.15 million that Philly's taking. So that means $2.4 million is what Washington will be saving. That's huge. That's a lot of money. It's really, really good. And Washington needs that. They need that cap space. And honestly, Niskanen, in my opinion, isn't the greatest player. Good lockdown guy, similar to Gudas, a little better, but he wasn't good last year for his standards. 8 goals, 17 assists. That's not special for a Matt Niskanen type player. He usually is a very good player, and last year he said that the Stanley Cup, winning that cup and having a short offseason, really affected him. So Philadelphia is banking on him to have a comeback season. I don't love when trades are like that. I like when you have a solid player coming in where you know what you're getting. Philly doesn't really know what they're getting. But one thing that Niskanen does provide that Gudas doesn't, 31 assists on the power play and 6 goals for a total of 37 points in 4 years on Washington. That's pretty good. So Gudas isn't providing that, Niskanen does. Moving on to the New York Islanders, they extended Jordan Eberle to a 5-year, $27.5 million contract. Eberle played in 159 games for the Islanders. He scored 44 goals, finished with 96 points. He is Matt Barzal's favorite player to play with. On the right side, Barzal and Eberle are a dynamic duo, and Lou Lamoriello wanted to lock that up. A lot of Islanders fans, a lot of analysts, a lot of people did not expect Eberle to be back because they thought he would just frankly want too much money. But he cited the camaraderie, the team spirit, the general happiness that the Islanders players have and passion they have for the game as a reason for staying put. He didn't want to go to free agency. He could have probably got a little more money, especially given the Kevin Hayes extension, which we will talk about later. But Jordan Eberle did what made him happy. He came back to the New York Islanders, and in my opinion, that was a very good move for both parties. He had 19 goals, 18 assists, last season, shuffling around on all lines. You could see that double next year. You really can. Jordan Eberle is a sensational player. For 5 years, $27.5 million, you're not really going to get better value than that. Good signing. Not great, but good, and the Islanders are happy to have him back. Next, something that confuses me, but I'm not a general manager. I'm not an owner. But for me, an outsider, I don't like this. I don't like these decisions. The Kings, they bought out Dion Phaneuf. The Flyers, they bought out Andrew McDonald. And the Ducks bought out Corey Perry. I am a firm, an absolute firm believer that buyouts should only be done if absolutely necessary. If the Toronto Maple Leafs needed to buy out Patrick Marleau, you could do that. But these three buyouts, all these teams are doing is rolling the ball down the hill and creating a long-term problem, trying to fix a short-term problem. Sure, the short-term problem is mitigated, but it's not fixed, and all you're doing is doubling the time you have to pay this player on the books, on the salary cap. For the Flyers, they have an abundance of cap space. They are throwing money around like nothing else. They did not really have to buy an Andrew McDonald, especially given he's a good seventh defenseman. It wasn't necessary. It was a luxury. It probably would help them now, but now, next year, the season after the next season, they have to pay him more money. He will be on the books. And when maybe the Flyers have a good season, they want to add in free agency, they want to do something, they're going to be paying Andrew McDonald for playing for another team. For the Kings, they are not contenders. They're just frankly not. They need to commit to this rebuild, and it shouldn't start by buying out Dion Phaneuf. Very good leadership guy. Amazing at practice. Just a good guy to have around the team. You pay him for 2 years. You just do it. Why do you have to buy him out, and now you have to pay him for 4 years? I just don't get it. And the Ducks are also in the same boat. 2 more years of Corey Perry. Corey Perry's contract situation is a little different. The Ducks will be saving a lot of money, hard cash. But for cap ramifications, the Ducks are a rebuilding team, but they're a good team with history and legacy. You pay him for 2 years. You keep him around. Leadership guy, it's Corey Perry. This guy won the Hart Trophy for you. Just keep him around. And, you know, don't roll the ball down the hill, as I keep saying. Why buy out three players that are still solid, still pretty decent, when it is a want, not a need? That's all I'm saying. So in my opinion, these three moves were unnecessary. So to continue, the Capitals extended Carl Hagelin to a 4-year, $11 million contract. And a lot of people like this. I am neutral to it. But after a season in which he played for three teams, he was traded twice. It felt like this man wasn't a player. He was just a commodity. He was just getting thrown around to whatever team needed him. He's not a star player. He's not an elite player. He's just a depth guy. So why is Washington going 4 years on this contract? I get that it probably kept the annual average value down. Sure, you're probably paying him a little less now, but why in the world are you going 4 years to a 31-year-old? I really don't understand. It's something that I guess isn't the worst signing in the world. He was good on the penalty kill. He's a speed guy, but you know, he's aging. 4 years for him, it seems like a buyout candidate, where in 4 years, maybe I'll be talking about why did the Capitals buy out Hagelin, because I don't know. Not my favorite move. Not my favorite move, but not the worst one. And then for our penultimate roster move, the New York Rangers acquired Jacob Trouba for Neil Pionk and a 2019 first-round pick. This was a pretty good move for the Rangers. I'm not going to lie. It was a very nice trade. You're looking at a guy that is a solid, and I mean solid, top two defenseman. He's not going to be your number one guy. He's not. I'm not going to lie to you. He's not the type of guy that goes out there and puts up 30 minutes a game. But he's a right-handed shot, a big body, a physical player that can do some damage. I really like Jacob Trouba. If he was on the Islanders, you have Ryan Pulock. You have Jacob Trouba. You got two right-handed shots. If he was on the Devils, another team pursuing him, oh, he would have been their number one guy easy. Andy Green was possibly that role. Ty Smith. I mean, they have a lot of guys that they need to come up, and the Devils could have really, really used Jacob Trouba. But he goes to the Rangers. And it was an interesting one because Jacob Trouba actually did something very admirable, given that the society, the hockey community, was kind of saying, this guy's a jerk. He demanded a trade because he wanted more playing time, didn't want to be behind Tyler Myers and Dustin Byfuglien. This guy demands a trade, doesn't get one, signs a bridge deal, apparently is not the best in the locker room, demands a trade again, doesn't want to be in Winnipeg. But you got to look at the whole story. Jacob Trouba notably said that his fiance's career is just as important as his, which is why he wanted to trade to the United States, specifically New York, the doctor at capital of the world, because his wife wants to be a doctor. While he has done some questionable things in the past, you have to respect that sacrifice. You have to, because Jacob Trouba is a good player, but he's a person first, he's a husband first, and Jacob Trouba did the right thing. That kind of straddled the Winnipeg Jets. They couldn't get everything they wanted to. I guarantee you, if the Jets traded him to another team, a better team, you know, they're getting more assets, but they're getting Neil Pionk and a 2019 first-round pick. Ironically, that first-round pick is Winnipeg, because Winnipeg traded their first-round pick for half a season of Kevin Hayes. Kevin Hayes, we'll talk about him later in the broadcast because, oh, Kevin Hayes, lots of drama with him. But the Rangers essentially traded half a season of Kevin Hayes as a rebuilding team. They didn't need him at all, so free. Here you go. You take Kevin Hayes on your playoff pursuit. Good luck. And Neil Pionk, who's a third-pairing defenseman at best, who was given way too much playing time and just didn't really work out with the Rangers. For Brandon Lemieux, a player I love. I adore Brandon Lemieux. He is exactly what the Blues had, exactly what the Bruins had, a physical presence, someone that you really want on your team. And Jacob Trouba. Those are two really good players, possibly the two best players in that deal. Obviously, Kevin Hayes is getting paid $7.14 million now, but I really like Brandon Lemieux. I really like Jacob Trouba. He's going to be a great addition to the blue line. The Rangers needed him. That's a good move for the Rangers. Can't say anything better about it. The Jets, I'll give it a C. Not the best decision, but you know what? The Jets did what they had to do. And finally, the Flyers are once again making the headlines. They have done some crazy things. They traded two assets, a second and a third round pick, for Justin Braun. For those of you who are casual hockey fans, you probably don't know who Justin Braun is. And that is because he is a third pairing defenseman for the San Jose Sharks. Sharks fans love him because he's kind of one of their only few defensive stalwarts. Someone that's really good defensively, not great offensively, but you know, Jacob Trouba went for a first in Neil Pionk. Justin Braun is going for a second and a third. I don't know if the value is there. Justin Braun's a good guy. He's a good player. He will help the locker room. He'll help the bottom pair. But now the Flyers have 8-9 defensemen that could suit up. It's just a weird trade. It's one I don't get. And the Flyers seem to be blessed with all this cap space. They haven't had it in a while. They just freed up $7 million getting rid of, you know, two depth players. They have cap space. They've got money to spend. And it seems like they're spending it a little too liberally. $14.34 million in next year's cap space has gone to Kevin Hayes. More to come on that later, as I keep saying. Justin Braun, Ratko Gudas retaining his contract, and Matt Niskanen. Is that worth $14 million? I don't think so. I really, really don't think so. And you're still 2 weeks away from free agency. The Flyers finally were liberated. And I will say liberated because they were. They were liberated. They had so many bad cap hits. They had so many bad contracts. They had so many bad everything. The Flyers were always that team that they could be this fringe team, but who knows what's going to happen with their cap. Finally, the Flyers had cap space, and what are they doing? They're throwing it all away. I guess the Braun deal's okay because it's only 1 year. He's a third-pair defenseman. Second, third-round picks, if you're not confident in this draft, albeit a very good draft, if you're not confident in it, whatever. Trade the mid-round picks. They might not turn into anything. But for Justin Braun, a guy with bad analytics, a guy with bad stats, he's not the best player. Get outshot when he's on the ice. You get outscored when he's on the ice. I don't like it. I just don't like it. So, a lot of moves going on. Honestly, the only one I like are for the Islanders and the Rangers. They got their guys, and they got them for a moderate price. Everyone else, I don't really know what Philly's doing. Capitals prioritizing Hagelin over their restricted free agents is okay. It's a fine move, but it's questionable. And then Yeah, that's just the Philadelphia Flyers. Interesting, as I keep saying, the Philadelphia Flyers. And we're going to get to that in our second half of the broadcast. We're going to talk about them exclusively and Kevin Hayes and Erik Karlsson, which we did not talk about. But first, we have a really great interview. Josh Yoey, will be joining us. He's the Penguins beat writer. He does a lot of great stuff. So that was our week in review. It was a crazy week, but stay tuned for a lot of these throughout the broadcast. We're not done yet, so stay tuned for Josh Yoey from the destination of all things hockey. We will be right back.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. For today's interview, we have a very special guest, Josh Yoey. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Very well.
So the Pittsburgh Penguins, the team you cover, they had a roller coaster of a season, to say the least. So much potential, ending in disappointing fashion. So just how shocking was the conclusion of the season for you?
Yeah, it really was. You know, I wasn't shocked that they lost to the New York Islanders just because the Penguins had been pretty inconsistent really all season. And if not for Sidney Crosby's incredible second half, they wouldn't have made the playoffs regardless. That said, I still kind of expected them to win that series, and I sure as heck didn't expect to see them get embarrassed the way they did, to be swept in four straight, and really, you know, two of those games weren't even competitive. And with all due respect to what the Islanders did, they were a nice story, but they weren't such of a dominant team that they should have wiped the Penguins out of the playoffs in four straight. So to see the Penguins look so impotent, really, that was shocking, and frankly, it embarrassed the entire organization, and it leaves you wondering just what might happen this summer, because clearly no one in the Penguins organization is very happy.
So what more could have been done to avoid this disappointing fate?
Can you repeat that?
Sure. So what more could have been done to avoid that disappointing fate?
Well, the Penguins have a lot of issues. To me right now, though, the single biggest issue I have with the Penguins and the way they play the game, and if you want to talk about what's wrong with them, this is such of a cliched thing to say, but they just don't really care about defense. I'm talking about overall team concept of playing defense. And in the NHL, I don't care how much talent you have. I don't care if you have Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Phil Kessel. If you're not interested in, as Mike Sullivan would say, playing the game the right way, you're not going to win. You just aren't. And, they just want to beat everybody 7-5. We saw it last season. And when you have that mindset as a team, you're not going to go very far. So when I think of the Penguins, yeah, there were other flaws, but that's the single biggest thing that sticks out for me.
So is that a Mike Sullivan issue, a Chris Letang injury issue, or is that just a whole team mindset in the locker room?
Well, it's certainly not a Mike Sullivan issue because, like any coach, he doesn't want his team playing that way, and it drove him nuts all season. I heard so many stories from players and people close to the team who would tell me during video sessions with Sullivan, he was just furious with them because there was just not a mindset of playing defense and of taking care of their own zone. Who's to blame? I certainly can't point the finger at one player. But I will say this. The Penguins were playing much better defensively in March. In fact, they went on a run. I forget what the record was in March. I think they went 10-3-1 or something like that during a stretch that really solidified their spot in the postseason. And they did that with Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang out of the lineup for the most part. They were both dealing with injuries. And it forced the Penguins to kind of adopt a more conservative defensive style. And it was beneficial. They looked like a legitimate playoff team, a team that could do some damage in the postseason. And then at the end of the regular season, what happens? Well, Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang return. And all of a sudden, a lot of the Penguins' bad habits return. So do I necessarily blame Letang and Malkin for that? I don't know if that's fair, but I do think just them being in the lineup, it changed the Penguins' approach. And it brought back those habits. It encouraged it, I think. And I know that Mike Sullivan and Jim Rutherford both thought that having those two back in the lineup was not really a good thing for the Penguins' mindset in terms of taking care of business in their own zone.
Interesting. So definitely a psychological issue there. So moving on to some of the positives, though, the Penguins weren't all that bad. So what are some of the few positives besides, playing a better defensive game that the Penguins can carry over to an important year next season?
Well, I'll start with the obvious in Crosby. It always starts with him. And he might not be quite the explosive player that he was a decade ago. Sid's going to be 32 in August. And, history tells us the greatest players of all time aren't quite as dominant at that age. So maybe he won't be offensively. But I will tell you, his defensive work has never been better. I actually gave him my first place Selke vote, and I was very surprised that he wasn't one of the three nominees.
Wow.
Because his two-way play was extraordinarily good. And I will also say, Jim Rutherford is, the classic home run hitting GM. When he misses, he misses. When he hits, it's in the upper deck. He made a really good trade in February with Florida to bring Nick Bjugstad and Jared McCann to the Penguins. McCann, in particular, what a revelation he has been. Just turned 23 years old. He's the real deal. The Penguins are in love with him. They think they can really have him as a building block for the future. So they've got some young players who can really play. And like I said, if they would just concentrate on the defensive zone a little bit moving forward, it's not like they don't have talent to still be a very effective team.
So two of Crosby's teammates that you have talked about, Malkin and Letang, they've occasionally been in some rumors. The Penguins have had a lot of rumors surrounding them. And Crosby said, as you tweeted out, "We've won a few Stanley Cups together. We'd like to win more." Do you think in that current state, seeing the declines from the Kings and Blackhawks that you've already written about, do you think it's possible for this team to be back at a Stanley Cup level?
I do, but I think pretty significant changes probably need to be made. Now, does that mean they need to trade Chris Letang or Evgeny Malkin? No, I don't think so. I still think Letang is a very good player who just had a bad playoff series. And I think Evgeny Malkin is an all-time great who had a bad season. I'd bet on him bouncing back before I would, trading him and thinking the return's going to help the Penguins more. That said, Jim Rutherford needs to make a couple of moves, and his hands are tied. The Penguins are, the salary cap situation is not good. They're only about $3 million under the cap right now, so they're not going to be real active in the free agency market. And also, the Penguins farm system is very possibly the worst in the NHL right now. I'd say it probably is. And that's what happens when you're in the win-now business and you trade all your prospects and all your draft picks. It's going to happen, and, hey, the Penguins would have done it all over again to have those Stanley Cup banners hanging from their rafters. Those don't go away, but it does make it hard. So Jim has to choose wisely. He's tried to trade Phil Kessel for 2 months now. I don't think many teams want him. I think it's a reputation thing more than anything else with Phil. I think he's a hard guy to trade. But they're going to try to make a couple of more moves to get back to being the faster team that they were in 16 and 17. That's how they can win. I would not count them out. As long as you have Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Matt Murray, who was great in the second half, you certainly had the foundation of a team that can be a champion. But I still think some changes need to be made.
So one of those changes, the Kessel trade that you highlighted, when Jim Rutherford says, I don't want to trade, when he makes the comments that we're not going to trade Phil Kessel, is that because Phil Kessel's an important part of this team, or is it, as you said, he just can't find a trading partner for him?
Well, a little bit of both. I think Jim's probably in some damage control there. If indeed he cannot trade Phil Kessel, and it looks like he won't be able to, he doesn't want there to be any drama in September when Phil Kessel shows up at training camp. He doesn't want to deal with that. He doesn't want Phil Kessel feeling unwanted by any stretch. So I think that's part of why Jim said what he said. But I still absolutely think that, plan A for the Penguins in the offseason was to trade Phil Kessel. It's not that they were unhappy with how he played. The guy's a point-per-game player. There's only so many of them. But I do think there's a sense among Penguins brass that Phil probably isn't quite the player he was 3 years ago. And let's be honest, Phil's reputation, while maybe he took some unfair heat in Toronto at times from the media there, dealing with Phil's not a picnic. He does drive coaches insane. There's no question he and Mike Sullivan have had their moments, and he does tend to have an expiration date wherever he's played over the years. So I think they ideally would like to trade him for a big haul if possible, but they're not going to trade him for the sake of trading him either, and it looks like there's just not that much interest out there right now. And if that's the case, Phil Kessel will be with the Penguins come October.
So you look at the stat sheet as a casual, person who doesn't watch the Penguins, and you're like, wow, Phil Kessel is a really good player. He's still scoring all these goals, all these points, and he's getting moved around the lineup. So he's a good player at heart, but he does have these issues, as you highlight. What are some specific things he can work on, especially if he's a member of the Penguins next year, so he's not making his coach mad and so he's not driving fans crazy?
Well, that's the thing. I don't think it's ever going to change with Phil. He doesn't have great practice habits. He doesn't like playing defensively. Stuff like that, I don't think that's going to change at 31, 32 years old. The biggest problem with Phil, if you just want to look at his game last year, he's still a really good skater. But I don't see Phil burning people one-on-one the way he once did. It used to be Phil would score 8 or 9 goals a year just getting a step on defensemen and firing that great wrist shot of his from the right-wing circle past goaltenders. He didn't really take that shot as much last season, and a lot of people said, well, Phil needs to shoot the puck more. Well, I would suggest it's not that simple, that a lot of times a player's shot totals go down because he's not freeing himself up to get open looks the way he was accustomed to in the past. And so I'm not saying Phil has, completely lost a step, but I think the rest of the league has gotten faster, and that area of the game for him just isn't quite there the way it once was. So I don't know how you fix that at 31. It's not like Phil isn't a good skater. I don't know how much better of a skater he can become at this age, though. So that's the one thing I noticed with his game. Listen, he went 2 months from the end of January until April 2nd without scoring an even strength goal. That, to me, was kind of a red flag. Great players don't go that long without scoring an even strength goal very often. So that was a little troubling. But that said, the guy's still a point-per-game player. He's still a magician on the power play. So it's not like Phil Kessel doesn't bring value.
So the move that you highlighted and broke was that there was a potential Jason Zucker trade that was possible and brewing, and that hasn't come to fruition yet. Is that because Minnesota's saying, we don't want to give you Jason Zucker for Phil Kessel, or is it because it's just the trade's not working out? And is there an option for a team like Arizona or a team with a lot of cap space to slide in and save and salvage a deal?
Well, I can tell you exactly what happened. The Penguins had a deal in place with Minnesota, and both general managers, Fenton and Jim Rutherford, agreed to it. The deal was Phil Kessel and Jack Johnson to Minnesota in return for Jason Zucker and Victor Rask. And there was only one problem with that trade. Phil Kessel has a partial no-trade clause. He can only be traded to 8 teams. I do not know the identity of those 8 teams, but I do know that the Minnesota Wild is not on that list. The Penguins, however, were quite certain that Kessel would be okay playing there, given that he played his college hockey in Minnesota and that he's from nearby Wisconsin. So from the Penguins' standpoint, it made sense. He's like, sure, Phil will probably accept this. Well, Phil thought about it for a couple of days, and from what I've been told, more than anything else, he just wasn't that impressed with Minnesota's roster, and he didn't really want to play there. So that's why the trade didn't go through. You mentioned Arizona. The Coyotes do make some sense. Phil Kessel's not an easy man to coach, but Rick Tocchet is a really close friend of his. They get along great. They worked together in Pittsburgh for 2 years. Tocchet would love to have him there from what I've heard, and I think Phil would love to play there. The problem with Arizona is just ownership and lack of money. They're in the middle of an ownership sale. They can't be spending money right now, so I just don't think they can take on his $6.8 million salary, and that's the issue there. I have to think other teams might be interested in Kessel, but clearly a lot aren't, and that really ties Jim Rutherford's hands a little bit.
Wow, that's a bummer with Arizona. Thank you for providing that insight. One thing that really stuck with me from that tidbit that you just said, the Penguins, you're telling me, were okay with taking back Victor Rask's contract, even though it meant getting rid of Jack Johnson. They were okay with taking back that albatross of a deal?
Well, they were, because Jack Johnson's contract is basically the same, and, you know, Rask makes a little bit more money, but Jack has 4 years left, and I think 3.25 a year. And I don't, some in the Penguins fan base despise Jack Johnson and think he's the worst player in history. I don't think Jack was that bad, but I don't think it's a good contract either. It's played so many years. So I think they were comfortable getting rid of kind of one bad contract for another. And remember this about Victor Rask. He was drafted by Jim Rutherford in Raleigh once upon a time.
Yeah.
So Jim has a, you know, so is Jack Johnson, incidentally, but Jim really likes him. He loves to bring back players that he's drafted at one point or another. So clearly that's a guy that Jim really believes in. And also the way Rask plays, I know he had a bad year, but he's been a good player in the past. And if the Penguins are going to move on from a guy like Patrick Hornquist at some point, to have somebody who can be a bit of a net front presence as a backup plan, I don't think was the worst idea for them. So, yes, they were perfectly prepared to make that trade.
Interesting. So moving on to another trade that actually did go through was the Olimata trade. And that trade was one that has two sides to the story, because on paper, if this trade was done 3 years ago, I don't think Pittsburgh fans would have been thrilled. But the thing is, Olimata's developed quite the weird reputation amongst Penguins fans. Seems like a good player, but just not a lot of fans' favorite person out there. Can you just provide some insight into, one, how good of a person he is, and why that his time on the ice this year just didn't go as planned?
Well, Olimata is one of the nicest human beings I've ever met in my life. Everybody loves Olimata. I was just talking with Sidney Crosby yesterday, and he just randomly commented how much he was going to miss having him around. Media loves him, players love him, you name it. Just a really good kid. He's 24. Even when he was 19, he presented himself like he was 40, just really mature beyond his years. Problem with Oli is he also skates like he's 40, and that's the issue. His first couple of seasons in the league, Olimata appeared to have star potential.
Yeah, definitely.
And he was, as a 19-year-old rookie, he was outstanding. And I remember thinking, man, this is Crystal Tang's defense partner for the next decade. The Penguins thought that, too. Oli's not a bad player. He does a lot of things really well. I'd say he's above average in a lot of ways. But he's just not a good skater. And against the particularly fast teams, man, it's really noticeable. I mean, when the Penguins played the Oilers the last couple of years, literally they couldn't have him on the ice when McDavid was on the ice. I realize Connor McDavid's speed makes a lot of defensemen look bad, but I mean they just couldn't have him out there. His
wow.
First step is that bad. So he does a lot of things well, but you better be careful who he's on the ice against, because this is not a great NHL skater by any stretch.
So John Tavares is a player. He has issues defensively. He had them, but he would do this thing every offseason with the Islanders where he would just pinpoint something in his game and just work and work and work. And he wasn't the best skater either, and he just worked, and you could tell he's just a hardworking train now. He's a good skater now. Do you think Mata is the type of player that can do some drills this summer and turn into a better skater, or do you think that's just an unsalvageable part of his game?
That's ironic that you bring that up, because Olimata is maybe one of the five hardest working players I've ever seen.
Wow.
I can't tell you how many times over the years he would be on the ice for a half an hour after practice, And usually the only other guys on the ice would be Sidney Crosby and Chris Letang. They were always the last three off the ice. And I remember distinctly Dan Bylsma and Mike Sullivan on numerous occasions literally going on the ice and telling Mata, hey, that's enough. You're going to wear yourself out.
I mean, wow.
So his work ethic is off the charts. And I can tell you in conversations I've had with Ole, he's just so frustrated that his skating hasn't gotten better the last couple of years, because it's not like he doesn't put the work into it, but boy, he's had a lot of injuries that have played a role. You know, he had cancer a few years ago. He had reconstructive shoulder surgery. He's had some hip issues. So I think the injury slowed him down more than anything. And as a result, you know, if he can stay healthy for the next two or three years and just keep putting the work in, maybe his skating can get better. He's still only 24, and like I said, he does so many things so well. But I would say the last two seasons in particular, his skating, or lack thereof, has been very noticeable, not in a good way.
That's a bummer. You hate to hear stories like that, but, you know, I'm glad you provided some insight into just how good of a kid he is, because the Twitter game, just the fan base of Pittsburgh just, you know, doesn't really like Ole, well, which is a shame.
Let me tell you something. You can't always base everything off of Twitter.
Yep.
Jack Johnson's also one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life.
100%.
I think half of Twitter would like to have him shipped off to Siberia, so, you know.
I completely agree with that. It's a new world we're living in, so thank you for providing some good insight into that. And moving on to the return, it was a good return, actually. I thought that that could be more of just a traditional cap dump, but they got a good player back and a pick. So you mind providing some insight into that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I said I knew a ton about him. I don't watch the Blackhawks play a ton. But certainly the numbers were impressive for a 23-year-old rookie.
Oh, yeah.
To put up the points that he did, and they were almost all even strength points. And, you know, he played a lot with Jonathan Toews, too, and he played well with him. And I think there's something to be said for that. You know, I can tell you from many years of covering Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, a lot of people think that, you know, they can take any average forward and make him a 25-goal scorer because they're Crosby and Malkin.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't always work that way.
Players
aren't easy to play with all the time. I mean, they're not. Sometimes it just doesn't work. So, you know, this is a kid who looked good with Jonathan Toews, and I think that is intriguing to the Penguins. They like to have different combinations that can work with Crosby and Malkin. And also, frankly, the Penguins' bottom six hasn't been very good the last couple of years. So if he ends up on the third line, that's okay. They feel like that's an upgrade. So, yeah, they're definitely pretty happy, I think, with the return they got from the Blackhawks.
You can certainly ask Anaheim about players that haven't worked out with Crosby and Malkin, Daniel Sprong getting shipped off there. Definitely one of those things where it could just be a mental thing, as you see with a lot of players, where just playing with Crosby and Malkin is just so overwhelming.
No, that's right. And, you know, some players defer to them too much. Some players don't defer to them enough. Daniel Sprong, you bring up his name. Daniel Sprong just had a really big ego and, frankly, rubbed some people in the locker room the wrong way. Incidentally, Twitter loved Daniel Sprong in Pittsburgh because they always felt like he wasn't getting enough of a chance. So see,
oh, my God.
Not that he's a bad kid, but he definitely carried himself like he had accomplished maybe a little more than he had in his career, and it certainly rubbed some people on the coaching staff and on the team the wrong way, I think. But, yeah, sometimes it works with the big guys, and sometimes it doesn't. That's just the way it is.
So moving on to definitely a big division in the National Hockey League, and that's the Metropolitan Division. Teams around the Penguins are improving. They're retaining players. They're making moves. How does that affect Pittsburgh's offseason, looking at teams around them just getting better and better?
Well, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because it's true. It's been a very good division over the years. And even these past couple of years, the depth of the division is what you notice. It wasn't maybe quite as top-heavy this past season. But look around. You know, the Capitals are still the Capitals. Okay, they're not going anywhere. As long as Barry Trotz is coaching the Islanders, even if they lose some more people, guess what? They're going to be at least a fringe playoff team because Barry Trotz doesn't miss the playoffs. We just know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Columbus might lose some people, but guess what? They're going to have more money to spend. That's a pretty darn good hockey team at the Great Young Blue Line. Good team. The Rangers get Trouba. That's going to make them a lot better. They didn't give up much for him either. You know, the Rangers will be looking to make a splash. That's just how they have always been. They have the money to do it. I could see them being a little better next year. Devils are going to get Hughes, the top overall pick. They're going to get better. Philadelphia's made a lot of moves in the last week. I don't know if I like all of them.
Me too.
But even if they're bad contracts, that still probably is going to make them better. So, yeah, and the Penguins in Carolina, we know what they did. So I think they're around to stay. It's a really good division. You can't say that there's a bad team in this division right now. There's really not. And, yeah, it does put pressure on the Penguins. So they've been in the playoffs 13 consecutive years, but they've had to scratch and claw to get in the last couple of years. So, you know, it's not getting any easier. And I think this is a crucial summer for Jim Rutherford. I've thought that for a while. They've had a couple of bad summers in a row. If they have another one, it's not inconceivable that they could miss the playoffs this year, especially if, you know, there's a significant injury to a Crosby or a Malkin. They just don't have the depth to make up for it anymore the way maybe they once did.
Jim Rutherford, an interesting character. You mentioned that it's an important offseason for him. Do you think that's causing pressure on him to make some really weird decisions? Jack Johnson signing, you know, good guy and everything, but I don't think there was one person who really thought that was a good deal to give him that term at the time. Is he starting to get a little anxious with his hot seat, or do you think his job is completely stable?
Well, I don't think Jim Rutherford has anything to worry about. Half of the Penguin fan base is ready to fire him and put him in a retirement home. But, you know, he's been the GM of the Penguins for 5 years. He inherited them when they were kind of a mess, quite honestly, in 2014. And they've won the Stanley Cup twice in those 5 years. And I can tell you for a fact that Mario Lemieux, who remains by far the most powerful person in the organization, thinks the world of Jim Rutherford. He really does. And he also thinks the world of Mike Sullivan, for that matter. So I don't think either of them is really on the hot seat right now. In particular, I think Rutherford is completely safe. The only thing I will say, since I brought up Sullivan's name, I talked with Jim Rutherford last week, and I asked him about Sullivan, who only has 1 year left on his contract, and I said, are you going to give him a new deal this summer to extend that contract? And Jim basically said that wasn't a pressing matter on the agenda right now. Maybe it'll happen, and maybe it won't. That got my attention.
Interesting.
That was kind of a surprising thing for him to say at that point in time. But as for Jim Rutherford, nah, he's completely safe.
Yeah, definitely could have given the journalistic, you know, it's, you know, we'll try to get to a type answer, but interesting that he's kind of saying, you know, a slightly more negative answer than he really has to.
Yeah, no, it was, and well, that's Jim, though. That's one of the perks of my job, is that I get to deal with Jim Rutherford, who, he just says it like it is. Yep. On the record, off the record, Jim doesn't lie to you, which I appreciate.
Yep, and so do you. And now I want to take a little bit of time to move to you personally. So for those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Destination Hockey on the 100 and Chamber radio station, and I'm here with Josh Yowie. So you personally, how have you been able to take Pittsburgh and make it your home, becoming not just, you know, the Penguins beat writer, but an icon in the area?
Well, no one's ever called me that before, so I'm going to hire you as my agent if you'd like.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You know what? I will say this. I'm from Pittsburgh. I've lived there all my life, so I feel like I have maybe a better understanding of my readers and of the fans than maybe other writers in other cities do. Pittsburgh's a different kind of city, and I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just a really passionate sports town. Sports come first. I still have memories of when I was a little kid, I'd be with my mom at church, and, you know, if the Steelers had a playoff game that day, everyone in church was wearing their Steelers jerseys, and the preacher would have his terrible towel on the pulpit. Like, literally, that kind of stuff happens in Pittsburgh. It's not like other cities, and I have an appreciation for that, and I know how the fan base operates, and I think that helps me a lot. And I will say that the Penguins are just a really classy organization to deal with. From the top on down, and it makes your job a lot easier when you're writing about good people. And Mario Lemieux is a good person. Sidney Crosby is a good person. Now, I'm supposed to be objective, and if Sidney Crosby, you know, plays a bad game, I'm going to say it, but it just makes it easier going to work every day knowing that these are good people in the community who are doing all the right things. And you kind of piece it all together, and, you know, I just think I have a good relationship with the fan base, and I've always enjoyed interacting with them, even if I get aggravated on Twitter every now and then, like we all do. And it's kind of the dream job. I wouldn't really want to cover any other team in any other city.
So how did hockey become your niche over other sports that you covered earlier, like baseball?
That's a good question. I will say, you know, I've covered other sports, like you said. I've covered the Steelers and Pirates here and there and stuff like that, and hockey players are a different breed. They're really good to deal with. I tell people all the time, like, you're just not going to meet many hockey players that you don't like, and that certainly helps. But I just have an appreciation for the fan base and really the organization in general. When I was a little kid, my mom would take me to Penguin games, and, you know, I still remember in the 80s, you know, going to a hockey game for the first time, and it just blew me away. The in-person experience was, like something that was almost indescribable, and to grow up watching Mario Lemieux in his prime certainly didn't hurt. If you want to, you know, fall in love with the game of hockey, just watching him when he was young and just dominating the league the way he was, I was completely hooked at a young age. So I put it all together, and that certainly makes me enjoy covering the sport.
So you've been able to witness some Stanley Cups as well. How does that differ as a journalist from regular season games, and just how cool is it to be a part of that?
It was. I mean, there's some people in my line of work who, you know, I'm going to be objective and I'm never going to smile. Like, come on, you're on the ice, but the Stanley Cup, that's pretty cool, whether you write about the team or you play for the team. But it was still just an awesome thrill for me a couple of years back in Nashville and the year before that in San Jose. Like I always say, you don't want to cover an average team. That's boring. Average teams are no good.
Oh, yeah.
You want to cover a team that really stinks because there's a lot of drama and people in my business like that kind of thing. Or you want to cover a team that's really good. And for me, like, I'll still take covering a team that's really good. Like, with all due respect to other teams and a lot of my colleagues who do a great job every night, I think to myself, God, I still get to watch Sidney Crosby and I'm getting mocked and play hockey every night. That's a pretty good deal. I'd rather write about those guys than, you know, some average player out there is working his butt off. I never complain about that.
So now that you've been at The Athletic for some time, how fun is it to work with so many great journalists?
Oh, it's really quite a thrill. In fact, I'm in Las Vegas right now for the NHL Awards, but I'll be in Vancouver over the weekend for the draft. I think there's going to be about 60 or 70 of us. We're kind of a small army at this point.
Wow.
I feel like we're going to invade British Columbia, and we're having a big get-together tomorrow and to work with people like Pierre LeBrun and Michael Russo in Minnesota, Aaron Portswine, and I could give you a list of 30 or 40 of the best beat writers in the country and just such gifted writers and honestly just good people. These are a lot of my friends that I work with, and now Rob Rossi and I both cover the Penguins for The Athletic. It's great. It really is, and it also, frankly, makes the job easier. If you hear the Penguins are trying to make a trade with St. Louis, well, before you were all alone. Well, now I can call Jeremy Rutherford, our writer in St. Louis, and say, hey, this is what I'm hearing. What are you hearing? And we kind of work together,
really cool.
And it gives us a distinct advantage, frankly, over the rest of the field. And, it's been a great experience. Our bosses couldn't possibly treat us better. And they have hired some really talented people, and I am very grateful to play a small role in that.
So just as a brief example, how did you and Michael Russo work together on, for example, that Minnesota trade rumor that you guys both did together? How cool was it to kind of combine and, you know, change sources on that specific story?
Yeah, I mean, that's really all it was. I had been hearing some rumblings, not really enough to, you know, make a call per se, but I'd heard a couple of things, and then I was sitting in my living room one afternoon, and I see Mike Russo on my phone, so we chat, and he said, hey, I'm kind of hearing this. I said, oh, all right, then. And then I made a couple of calls, and I called him back. I said, well, guess what? I'm hearing this. And we were, you know, certainly on the same page, and, yeah, that's exactly how we piece it together, really. And it's an unorthodox thing. When you write for a newspaper, you know, like I did at the Tribune Review for years, you're on your own. You're on an island. Guy like Mike Russo is your competition, frankly. And so it's nice. I guess we're kind of like the Golden State Warriors a little bit. We just try to merge all the powers together. And it certainly has been a lot of fun. And, it's been a great experience. And like I said, I really love the people I work with. I can't say enough about how great they are to deal with on a daily basis. And, certainly the feedback from the readers, they certainly seem to really enjoy the website. There's so many articles every day that I literally can't keep up. I'm sure there's lots of good stuff that I haven't had a chance to read.
Wow.
But I certainly recommend it for anyone.
And on this transition, you give me the meatball. You bring up the Golden State Warriors, finally, for my final question. A little bit outside the box, but I do want to get your opinion on it. On Twitter, you said the NBA final was 100 times more interesting than the Stanley Cup final. Sadly, I have to agree this year, but that shouldn't be the case in future years. How can the NHL avoid an encore?
Well, God, a lot of hockey people got upset with me when I said that. It wasn't really a knock on the NHL so much as it was. I thought the NBA final was just, you know, fascinating, really.
Oh, yeah.
When you have this superpower team that is losing its Hall of Fame players left and right to injury, and they just wouldn't die. I think I tweeted that right after Klay Thompson emerged from the locker room and shot free throws on a torn ACL. Like, wow, this is – and I'm not really a huge basketball guy, but that was good stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. How could you not respect that, right? And with all due respect, what the Blues did was great. I'm taking nothing away from them. They are worthy champions. But the fact is the NBA is a lot better at promoting its stars than the NHL is. It's always been that way. And maybe the NBA goes too far in that direction. Maybe that's why we always have LeBron James or Michael Jordan in the final. Maybe there's too much of that. But that's still what fans want. And I felt like the Stanley Cup final, there wasn't really that much star power. It was good competitive hockey, but there wasn't that much intrigue. Mm-hmm. I still think it's healthy for a league when you've got guys like Crosby or Ovechkin or hopefully someday Connor McDavid in the Stanley Cup final. Hockey people, for whatever reason, don't like to acknowledge that can be a good thing for the sport, but star power sells, and we have a lot of stars in this game right now, and I just hope they get properly promoted into the future.
Well, that was a tremendous all-access interview with Penguins beat writer Josh Yowie. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Anytime, my friend. Take care.
Of course. So you can read all of his work on The Athletic with the subscription for only $60 a year. After a short break, we will be right back to talk about two huge contracts signed last week and the NHL Awards. From the destination for all things hockey, we will be right back.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody out there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Join us for a fun-filled evening at the Hunterdon County Crime Stoppers annual fundraiser, Thursday, November 16th, 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Lone Eagle Brewing, 44 Stangle Road, Flemington. Craft beer tasting, great food, door prizes, live music, and a 50-50 raffle. Tickets are $50 each, and sponsorship advertising opportunities are available. Please visit www.crimestoppershunterdon.com or call 908-437-0126. We'll have a barrel of fun.
On Monday, Erik Karlsson signed an 8-year, $92 million extension with the San Jose Sharks. This contract, to say the least, is huge. Absolutely huge. Gargantuan. And perhaps even the dreaded term, albatross. The Sharks re-signing Karlsson was a major win for the short term. It was, and I'm not going to deny that. Obviously, Karlsson's a pretty good player. He's won 2 Norris trophies and is a fantastic puck mover and offensive defenseman. But he is 29, and the Sharks already have Brett Burns. While the Sharks are an old team just craving a cup, this was not the way to go about it. This decision was careless, it was risky, and frankly, it can end it all. The Sharks are now in a place nobody wants to be in. Self-induced cap hell. Carlson's ridiculous contract means the Sharks will not be able to sign all of their free agents, including Joe Pavelski, their captain, Joe Thornton, a San Jose legend, Jonas Donskoy, Timo Meier, Gustav Nyquist, Kevin LeBanc, and even a heralded player like Michael Haley. They will need to start making choices. Also, between Carlson, Burns, and Marc-Edouard Vlasic, the Sharks have $26.5 million per year tied up on the cap until 2025. I can't even believe that I am saying this. On top of that, Logan Couture and Evander Kane make a combined $15 million per year, and Evander Kane isn't even that big of a star. It is a big issue for San Jose, and they're going to have a lot of thinking to do. And this is not even taking into account Erik Karlsson, the player that was signed. He is an injury-prone player who struggles in his own end. And I'm sorry, but paying $11.5 million a year to a defensive liability, I do not care how good he is offensively, is a bad decision. Karlsson most likely won't even be able to finish this contract healthy, let alone as a player worthy of making more than 203 times the average American household. When this contract is all said and done, the Sharks will have a Stanley Cup. They better, because if not, this will kill an already limping franchise. Next up, let's move on to Kevin Hayes, the newest Philadelphia Flyer. He recently has signed with the Flyers on a 7-year late-night $50 million contract. Hayes is 27 and has gotten more than 20 goals, yes, a grand total of, wait for it, once, and more than 50 points, wait for it, this is good too, once. Now he is the 18th highest paid center in the NHL. He is paid like an elite player, when at best, he's a second line center, maybe even a third line center. He is a glorified Ryan Strome. The thing with the Flyers is, they have the cap space to do this, so it's not the worst deal. They have had countless bad contracts in the past, and they're just substituting those with a new one. Jori Lehterä and Dale Weiss made a combined $7.05 million. So what are they doing? They're paying .09 more to Hayes. Not the worst thing ever, but Hayes is still taking that money on the books. And this move feels forced. The Flyers traded for his rights, giving up a valuable pick in a deep right, in a deep draft, excuse me, decided they were re-signing him with no negotiation, just saying, we are re-signing him no matter what we have to pay him. And when Hayes had all the leverage, guess what he did? He pounced, and he demanded $50 million and got it. They are now playing a glorified depth forward, more than Patrice Bergeron in Boston, Nathan MacKinnon in Colorado, and Mark Schlifele in Winnipeg. Philly got played, but they do not seem to mind. Good old Philadelphia. Two contracts, the San Jose Sharks and the Philadelphia Flyers, not taking into account the NHL salary cap. You have to take into account the NHL salary cap because these contracts can damage your future. Doug Wilson, I don't know if he thinks he's going to be having a new job in 8 years, but if not, and he's still the GM, he is going to have an absolute nightmare on his hand paying Erik Karlsson, an aging injury-prone defenseman, 11.5, not even 11 like Drew Doughty, $11.5 million per year for 8 years. That is going to be a huge issue and will give San Jose Sharks fans headaches, possibly derailing their entire future. And then you've got the Philadelphia Flyers. Why do they need Kevin Hayes? Why did they need to give him that much money? You have so many good people, including Logan Patrick coming up, Claude Giroux, Jakub Voracek. The forward depth is there. Why Kevin Hayes? Why not make a Nazem Kadri trade to a desperate Toronto Maple Leafs and give up a pick? That fifth and a prospect that you gave up for Hayes in that trade. Why are they doing what they're doing? It is completely mind-boggling to me. And honestly, the NHL needs to reevaluate. Most of the moves made this past week were bad. Trading bad talent for bad talent. Overpaying for replaceable commodities. the NHL general managers complain about a low cap, but they also make these mistakes. There's no thought for the future. There's no thought for the present. It's all, how can I get the Stanley Cup? But they need to think of the future, because it seemed like the St. Louis Blues, they got a Stanley Cup because they cared about their team. Their general manager was a good guy. They made a smart trade to a desperate team. They just are a good organization, and they deserved it. And frankly, they valued determination, grit, physicality, on top of some top-end skill. Colton Parenko, homebred guy. How can they make him the best player he is? Jay Bouwmeester deserved it. Their captain, Alex Pietrangelo, on top of the hockey world, living on a mountain right now. He deserves it too. They're all just good people, paid accordingly. Vladimir Tarasenko, when trade rumors were circling, they weren't going to trade him, ever. They just wanted to keep him. Look at a team like Pittsburgh. As Josh Yowie said, they are just desperately trying to get rid of Phil Kessel, a point-per-game player. It stinks. It stinks. It's the NHL. Talent, money, it goes two hand in hand. And unfortunately, teams are not thinking. So, moving on to the NHL Awards, some players who deserve some recognition for the good things that they have done. The NHL Awards are tonight in Las Vegas. It's a big night. Josh Yowie was there in Vegas. We're going to see some awards. Let's go over my predictions. For the Hart Trophy, the league's most valuable player, give me Nikita Kucherov. This guy was an absolute beast this year, and I do not see him losing this. For the Norris, Mark Giordano, absolute robbery that he was not an all-star. He should have been on the all-star team over one of those San Jose Sharks. He will get the Norris. Vezina, Bishop and Leonard really, really deserve it. Honestly, I think Leonard should get it based off his story. That's not how the voters think. Bishop played fantastically but didn't play enough games due to an injury. Vasilevsky, is the betting favorite. I think he takes home the hardware. For the Selkie, you have Patrice Bergeron, who's just a really solid player, good on the faceoffs, good defensively. Then for the Calder Trophy, a lot of people are saying Jordan Binghamton deserves it, as he should, but playoffs don't count, so in my opinion, Elias Pettersson takes the hardware. Jack Adams Trophy, give me Barry Trotz in a landslide. Barry Trotz deserves everything that he is getting. And then for some other awards, Lady Bing, give me Ryan O'Reilly. He did some fantastic things this season. GM of the Year, Lou Lamoriello should be on there, but I guess not. Hurricanes General Manager, Don Waddell, give me him because he's just a really, really solid general manager and did some really good things with no cap space. And last but not least, Robin Lehner deserves the Masterson Trophy. What a story. So that concludes another episode of Destination Hockey. For more interviews, predictions, and analysis, be sure to follow along all summer. You can catch us on social media on Instagram at @drive4five, on Twitter at @drive4five_, and on Facebook on the official Destination Hockey page. From the Destination for All Things Hockey, I will see you next week.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Senate leaders have agreed on a bipartisan emergency funding bill that addresses the overflow of illegal aliens at the U.S.-Mexico border. But the House and administration have still yet to get on board with the bill that has funds of about $4.5 billion. Louisiana Republican Congressman Steve Scalise.
It's time for Speaker Pelosi to bring a bill to the House floor to address the serious crisis and make sure that HHS has the money they need to take care of the health care needs of these young children that are being abused.
Another tense hearing on Capitol Hill over the Boeing 737 MAX jets. Retired pilot Sully Sullenberger was there to testify, saying that pilots need to be properly trained on the software of the airplanes.
These crashes are demonstrable evidence that our current system of aircraft design and certification has failed us. These accidents should never have happened.
This is USA Radio News.
At Walgreens, we know that your day doesn't stop for diabetes. So when you've got places to go and people to see, count on Walgreens every day to get expert diabetes advice 24/7. Find all major brands of testing supplies like Walgreens True Metrics in-store and online. And download tools to help you stay on track, like our 5-star mobile app with Pill Reminder. At Walgreens, we are